This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
Sure. And going back to what you said about digital imaging or 3D imaging, what you're really creating is a digital twin of the building, which exactly. Then you can reference for issues like maintenance or even use it to do virtual tours. Much better than photos or videos, which honestly is a skill set that many property managers have to outsource and hire in, and it's non-standard. So we've talked about chatbots, digital twins briefly. Any other technologies you think are interesting in the property management space?
Yeah, I think the field technology. I mean, 3D imaging is one of those, but also being able to arm the boots on the ground in all of our markets with a mobile application that allows them to log all the information that is going on whenever they visit a property, and piping that back into our backend systems like that, the sort of field tech
inspection.
Yeah, like a property inspection, or for example, if we need to do a health and safety check every 6 months on a property to get photos for the property owner, having that field tech connected real time to sort of the consumer facing product, it just increases transparency and helps owners and us avoid things that can cost cause big legal mistakes or costly issues, like, you know, a tenant not taking care of their property and letting an issue go bad. So that sort of piping of information and what we call sort of the offline data, metadata of a property, that's key for us as well as part of our tech stack.
You know, every podcast or YouTube show you listen to, the age-old wisdom is you have to put your eyes on the property. It has to be local within driving distance because, you know, like the idea of doing an inspection, you know, if you're not there and you can't have your eyes on the ground or boots on the ground, things will be a mess and it's difficult to manage. And technology is changing that to some degree. How do you think about the idea of managing a portfolio beyond, far away? Like, you know, what, for you guys as a property management firm, what is the most acceptable distance you'll have between one property and another? Because I'm sure the more properties you have closer together, the easier it is to service all of them. Mm-hmm. Is there a rule you have? Like, how far would you go?
So for us, we like, for example, in the Bay Area, we cover a radius of about 100 miles around all around the Bay Area. So we're as far north as Santa Rosa, all the way down to Santa Cruz, Morgan Hill area. So we cover a huge scope of space, but we only have one office in that location. And then our other markets like Seattle, we don't have any office. We just have the boots on the ground. And so that, I think investing, if you have the right, team and technology in place locally, then you can trust them to be able to manage a disparate portfolio. But if you're going with, a traditional property manager, then you're going to be restricted by their small service area. And like I mentioned, there's 50 in San Francisco just serving San Francisco. So then you're going to have to deal with, if you want to invest in San Francisco and Santa Cruz and Denver, you're going to have to use three different property managers. With us, you just use one.
So what's going to happen here? You've got mom and pop property management firms that are, average managing 200 doors, and it's really one key person running between all of them. You've got national firms. How is this industry going to shape out? What's your prediction for the future of the property management industry? And what are your ambitions in relation to that?
Yeah, so we believe the future of the property management industry is, what I think is going to happen is there's going to be sort of this institutionalization of the small residential asset class with a technology layer in the mix. So if you look at sort of after the global financial crisis, there Blackstone and some other big private equity firms came in and started buying up residential real estate and single family rentals to the tune of maybe 50, 70,000 properties across the country, and started to institutionalize the way they operated them and managing these portfolios. And these companies now have market caps, you know, in the dozens of billions of dollars, but they only represent 2% market share of the residential rental inventory. So I think what's going to happen next is the new generation is taking over real estate. You have the millennial generation quickly followed by Gen Z that is now representing the largest chunk of our today's home buyers. It's already been for a while now the largest chunk of today's home renters, and next it'll be the largest chunk of tomorrow's home investors.
Wait, so you said there's an institutionalization of the single family asset class going with the technology layer, just to throw in the buzzword there, but you're now talking about tomorrow's home buyers, and those don't sound like institutions to me. Institutions sound like what, big firms that'll keep buying and buying, and that's happening, by the way. I'm seeing that. So what do you mean when you say tomorrow's home buyers are going to make up most of
that? Well, what I'm saying is that there's just this generational shift happening in real estate, and the new generation wants a technology-enabled brand, right? They want a technology-enabled experience. They're digital natives. They've grown up using their phones to browse for places to live, but now they're going to want that experience to rent, buy, sell, invest in real estate. And the institutional aspect of it is that these institutions that can aggregate large portfolios of properties and be able to operate them with technology will be the ones controlling the housing
inventory that's available.
Okay, so really you're saying two things, and it's important not to blur the two unless you feel they should be blurred, that there will be an institutional driven approach where firms will get larger and larger as they buy smaller and smaller assets and combine them together into a portfolio. And it's because they're putting a tech-driven layer on it that the consumers, the renters, and the buyers want to transact on that because there's technology involved. You're not saying that you're not talking about fractionalization, basically. Fractionalization is another completely different trend. And who knows where it's going to go? Either it's going to be institutionalized or it's going to be fractionalized. Fractionalized means a lot of crowdfunding, a lot of buying real estate in little chunks where you got people pooling their money together. And we've had people on the show talk about this. Pooling their money together, maybe 10 people, and they're buying, you know, 10 pieces of property together. Do you see that as a trend? Or do you think it's really institutionalization that's going to be the trend? Or are they both trends and it's going to come out of somewhere else, the market share?
I think, you know, institutions will be able to offer people that fractional ownership model, right? And, you know, they inventory is going to be king. And so if you can aggregate all the inventory quickly because you have implemented technology to grow quickly and scale quickly, then you can start now also offering fractional ownership to people and, you know, be a part of every part of their stage of real estate. So, I, as a new age renter, I'm going to go rent a property from this tech-enabled institutional, you know, provider. They may be the actual owner of that property, or they may be representing, you know, another person for them. And then as I live in that property, I might earn ownership in, let's say, for example, the whole portfolio that this property is part of, or that specific property that I'm living in.
Very different to how home ownership is today.
Exactly.
So you're saying that in some ways the fractionalization of real estate is an exit strategy for institutions, where institutions can tap into liquidity, which is a novel idea. That's something to get your head around if you're a listener. So much is happening right now, and Airbnb is part of the trend here, where people are taking these single family homes and are making them places you can make money from. But actually, numerous things are happening. I mean, this is going to change the concept of home ownership completely. The way homes are bought and sold and rented is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, I mean, people want to be a little bit more mobile and move around, but they still want, you know, the American dream of home ownership. And, you know, over 70% of, you know, people, millennials, still believe home ownership is a good investment. and it's something they aspire to have in their life.
It's the American dream, and most renters are unhappy renting, they prefer to own. And it's a vicious cycle, you could say. Like, if you don't get on, if you don't have money, it's harder to make money. If you don't step onto the ladder, you just simply can't play the game. And inflation, damn, that's scary. You know, with the federal government and countries around the world pumping in so much money into the economy, house prices will certainly increase. And this is a good time to own real estate, and it's somewhat of a hedge against inflation, some could say. What's your thoughts on this statement I'm about to make? Okay, statement is that you cannot fractionalize single family and other asset classes unless there is some serious oversight going on. By that, I mean a good technology layer and prevention of fraud and things like that. So I'll give you an example. It's easy to assume you can fractionalize stocks. I mean, stocks are fractionalized, damn it. You can buy fractions of Bitcoin. You can buy fractions of public stocks. Mm. There's so much regulation, but there's also so much transparency, and everything's commoditized. I don't see how you can fractionalize one single dinky, single family property in some random place, right? Unless you bring transparency, unless you bring regulation. Do you agree with that, Philly?
I think regulation is part of it, and just making sure that, the reason why there's issues of fraud and just complexity in fractionalizing these small assets is there's so many different parties involved. You've got, the person that's got the deal, you've got, maybe the real estate agent, the platform, the home buyer, the seller, whatever it may be. And in between each of those groups is a layer that needs to be bridged with trust and transparency. And sometimes people take advantage of that bridge to create to sort of obscure the truth about a property. The person with the deal may not disclose, all the plumbing issues that this property has, or that it's in a landslide prone area. So you get all of these gaps in data and information. And so I think regulation is part of it, but also having sort of a one-stop shop experience where the properties that are being fractionalized are either owned or operated entirely by one kind of organization or someone that can have transparency throughout the whole life cycle of that property.
You don't mean one organization like a monopoly player, do you think basically, if you say at the beginning the 2% stat, how big are you going to get super companies? Is this going to be an industry where there's going to be like a Facebook and a Google and an Amazon, where you'll have large institutions owning 10-20% of the market, or do you think it will always be fragmented?
I think it's very realistic to think that the world's next Google, next Facebook is going to be a prop tech company. And theoretically, a prop tech company should surpass the valuation of even those companies, because the size of this asset class, $200 trillion, and the real estate is the largest asset class in the world. It's also our biggest personal investment that any of us usually make in our lives. And it's also the most personal and space that we have in our lives. It's our most prized possession oftentimes. So those facts make it prime to spawn, what I think could be the world's next largest company. And it's not gonna be one monopoly. I mean, the market, the economy of real estate is too big for just one. It's going to be big players. Just to give you a scope of that scale, those companies that I mentioned that have 20, 30, 40 billion dollar market caps are just right now controlling only 2%, less than 2% of the inventory.
Yeah, that's why I invest in prop tech startups, because I see tremendous opportunities coming from this sector, and OneRent being a portfolio company of ours, we're very excited about. And one of those examples where, rather than starting my own company, much easier to invest, at least in prop tech, it seems, for now. To me, what do you think about this? To me, it feels like it's kind of late to start a company in prop tech. because so many people are working on ideas now, or do you disagree with that? Do you think it's still a good time to start a prop tech company? I keep flipping back and forth. If you listen to earlier podcasts when I first started doing this show, I was a firm believer that now is the best time, but after seeing hundreds of pitches, it's like, wow, every potential idea you could possibly brainstorm, I've seen. And you know, not only have I seen it here, I've seen variants of it globally. It seems like now is the time, or sort of the door is closing. And that also speaks to the fact that you should be investing in startups now. I don't think you're gonna be able to take advantage of the upcoming boom in prop tech, waiting 5 years from now to make investments. It feels like now, today, this generation of companies are the ones that are going to be in that batch that will become the next, you know, major Fortune 500 companies of the future. Or do you think there's evergreen? Do you think there'll just continue to be opportunities? Like, what I'm really asking is, what's your time window, you think, on all of this happening, and the time window for startups and opportunities for founders?
Yeah, so I think you're gonna see companies that are as big as some of the largest, you know, traditional, what I call traditional real estate companies like CBRE, JLL, Invitation Homes. You're gonna see startups in their respective spaces surpass them in the next 5-10 years.
I think that may be a bold claim, but I think the sort of level that technology has reached now has opened up just how much you can sort of digitize all the offline work that each of these companies does. And these companies, you know, they've built really well-proven systems and they've operated them. So they're sort of reliant on those systems that they build, and they're not gonna flip the switch and just make them tech-enabled all at once.
You know,